Chapter 34. The attack began shortly after 2 a.m., at the darkest hour of the night, when sleep is heaviest and reactions slowest. Ray was dead to the world, though the world had weighed heavily on his weary mind. He was on a mattress in the foyer, pistol by his side, the three garbage bags of cash next to his makeshift bed. It began with a brick through the window, a blast that rattled the old house, and rained glass and debris across the dining room table and the newly polished wooden floors. It was a well-placed and well-timed throw from someone who meant business and had probably done it before. Ray clawed his way upright like a wounded alley cat and was lucky not to shoot himself as he groped for his gun. He darted low across the foyer, hit a light switch, and saw the brick resting ominously next to a baseboard near the china cabinet. Using a quilt, he swept away the debris and carefully picked up the brick, a new red one with sharp edges. Attached was a note held in place by two thick rubber bands. He removed them while looking at the remains of the window. His hands were shaking to the point of not being able to read the note. He swallowed hard, tried to breathe, tried to focus on the handwritten warning. It read simply, "Put the money back where you found it, then leave the house immediately." His hand was bleeding, a small nick from a piece of glass. It was his shooting hand, if in fact he had such a thing. And in the horror of the moment, he wondered how he could protect himself. He crouched in the shadows of the dining room, telling himself to breathe, to think clearly. Suddenly the phone rang, and he jumped out of his skin again. A second ring, and he scrambled into the kitchen, where a dim light above the stove helped him grapple for the phone. "Hello?" he barked into the receiver. "Put the money back and leave the house," said a calm but rigid voice, one he'd never heard, one he thought in the blur of the moment carried a slight trace of a coast accent. "Now, before you get hurt." He wanted to scream no, or stop it, or who are you? But his indecision caused him to hesitate, and the line went dead. He sat on the floor, and with his back to the refrigerator, he quickly ran through his options, slim as they were. He could call the police, hustle and hide the money, stuff the bags under a bed, move the mattress, conceal the note but not the brick, and carry on as if some delinquents were vandalizing an old house just for the hell of it. The cop would walk around with a flashlight and linger for an hour or two, but he would leave at some point. The priest boys were not leaving. They had stuck to him like glue. They might duck for a moment, but they were not leaving. And they were far more nimble than the Clanton night watchman, and far more inspired. He could call Harry Rex, wake him up, tell him it was urgent, get him back over to the house and unload the entire story. Ray yearned for someone to talk to. How many times had he wanted to come clean with Harry Rex? They could split the money, or include it in the estate, or take it to Tunica and roll dice for a year. But why endanger him, too? $3 million was enough to provoke more than one killing. Ray had a gun. Why couldn't he protect himself? He could fend off the attackers. When they came through the door, he'd light the place up. The gunfire would alert the neighbors. The whole town would be there. It just took one bullet, though. One well-aimed, pointed little missile that he would never see and probably feel only for a moment or two. And he was outnumbered by some fellas who'd fired a hell of a lot more of them than Professor Ray Attlee. He had already decided that he was not willing to die. Life back home was too good. Just as his heart rate peaked and he felt his pulse start to decline, another brick came crashing through the small window above the kitchen sink. He jerked and yelled and dropped his gun, then kicked it as he scrambled toward the foyer. On hands and knees, he dragged the three bags of cash into the judge's study. He yanked the sofa away from the bookshelves and began throwing the stacks of bills back into the cabinet where he had found the wretched loot in the first place. He was sweating and cursing and expecting another brick or maybe the first round of ammo. When all of it had been crammed back into its hiding place, he picked up the pistol and unlocked the front door. He darted to his car, cranked it, spun ruts down the front lawn, and finished his escape. He was unharmed, and at the moment, that was his only concern.